Very good. All right, Janet.
I'm so blessed to be here. I'm usually upstairs when it's a Q&A, so.
They gave you a teaching break today, huh?
I'm going next week. But I just love so much what you said about...
Remind me to work on that schedule so this doesn't happen again. Okay. So. Somebody messed up, I guess. I don't know.
Thank you.
Rabbitson, where are you?
I love your sense of humor. It's just so cool.
Oh, she's funny. She thinks I was joking. All right, go ahead.
Right. So what you were saying about the... Just a quick comment. When you're saying about the rational voice, right, that we can put ourselves into observant mode, right? See when we're losing it. I was thinking about the rational voice, which is the sound voice, just Yeshua, right? I mean, oftentimes I find myself saying, okay, so what am I not seeing here? Why is this upsetting me so much? Why am I supposed to learn from this? And then something will come right away, but I don't do it enough, which is why I get in trouble sometimes. But I do think that he's so near to us. If we, you know, if we seek him, he'll give us what we need in the moment, don't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, and part of it's just, you know, that small voice that can come and give you that. But usually the small voice sounds like somebody else. Like if you're my student, it sounds like me, where you've heard the teaching, it's him, but you hear my voice telling you something that you heard in the teaching when you needed to hear it. Because there have been people tell me all the time, Rabbi, I can't get you out of my head. Well, it's not me in your head. It's you needed to hear something from him. It's something that I said that he gave me to say. And so that's, again, about getting into the discipling student relationship adds to your ability to see yourself or recognize, oh, this is one of those moments where this thing that Rabbi said, which is what the scripture said, which applies here.
Yes.
Okay? But if you're not putting that in and studying it and kind of really having it sink in deeply, it's not going to... It's like a child. If you raise the child well, at some point, the child's going to hear your voice in their head at a moment of decision. Okay? Or they're going to hear your voice after they did something dumb and realize, oh, that's what mom meant. Okay? But that's only if you train them well, meaning that you gave them the information on a regular basis over and over again so that they would have it. Okay? It's not going to prevent foolishness from happening, but at least all of a sudden they go, oh, I get it now. All right? I can connect that dot. All right? Usually it turns into, an elder and I could tell you both stories about people that don't want to listen about finances, and then at some point when it finally blows up on them, they come back and go, yeah, you were right. And okay? So it's sometimes it's useful and important to kind of have it blow up a little bit, because it's easiest to look up the vertical, so to speak, when you're laying on your back realizing that your way didn't work. All right, go ahead, Janet.
Rabbi, my question is about Proverbs 31st, which is always what we read on Erev Shabbat.
Yes.
And so with the, I think it's verse 11 and 12, when it says, the heart of her husband shall trust her, and he has no lack of gain, and she shall do him good and not evil all the days of her life. Initially, I thought it was all the days of his life. It's all the days of her life. So I do know, I mean, we know what evil is with your teaching. So I don't know if there's a connection between the two with when it says she shall do him good with he has no lack of gain. I mean, can you expand
all right,
a bit
so
on that?
So the Proverbs 31 woman, which is, you know, all churches use it, all synagogues use it. I mean, it's a main primary thing. You know, it's supposed to be the height of womanhood, okay, being talked about here. But in a relationship, look at how the relationship works, okay? Begins with who can find a capable wife. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to describe how that capable wife behaves and how the husband is blessed because of it, okay? And his role in dealing with and nurturing that. So it says that she's worth far more than rubies. The heart of her husband shall trust her. If she's capable, he's going to trust her. If he trusts her, she might turn out to be more capable. Without trust, there is no husband-wife relationship that's ever going to work. There has to be trust. Both ways. I have to trust my wife. She has to trust me. Not just in the terms of fidelity, but in terms of how we are going to handle things. She's trusting me to provide a safe environment with all the things to sustain a decent lifestyle. And I'm expecting her to do certain things, like when we had children, to do certain things as far as I knew that the children were in capable hands there. I trusted her there. Okay, the things that we're expecting from each other, we trust. Whatever the role is. In this case, in the Proverbs 31 woman is very productively also got side hustles and businesses going on. Okay? She's producing, and the husband's trusting her to do that, but she's also trusting him to do his thing. Okay? Now, so the heart of her husband shall trust her, and he has no lack of gain from the relationship of having a capable wife who he trusts. Okay? She's capable. But you can have a capable person, a husband or wife, but if you don't trust them, they may not perform as they could, husband or wife. I mean, you may have a much better husband than you think you have, but you don't trust him and you don't encourage him, so he doesn't ever get there. You may have a better wife or more capable wife than you think you have, but you're not trusting her, you're not nurturing that, you're not encouraging that, then you're not going to get or allow the environment for the elevation again. In other words, elevating means getting you to that higher self that you're capable of becoming. But it needs to be encouraged. It needs to be worked at. It needs to be nurtured. It needs a space that's safe to grow it in. Okay? Now, then you get to verse 12, which says, she shall do him good and not evil all the days of her life. Mm-hmm. Which is why he trusts her also. So what does it mean to do good? Mm-hmm. She's going to do things that are good by his definition. Okay? In other words, what he would desire, because we're talking about a husband-wife here, so it's not just a Yahweh definition here, but, you know, you may want to do something for me that I don't want you to do for me. And not because it's bad or anything, it's just I'd want to do it myself or whatever it is. So you must learn your spouse, both ways, by the way, because I would want also as a husband to do good for my wife, but it has to be something she thinks is good. Right. Now, then it says, and not evil. What do we define evil as? Harm, suffering, okay? Destruction of some sort. Now, by the way, you can't do good or evil in a relationship unless you know what that other person sees it as. Okay? It's kind of like the love language thing, okay? Hopefully you guys heard me talk about it in the past. You know, there's a group that came up with arbitrarily 5 love languages, and I'm good with those. The thing is, if I think that love is communicated by, I don't know, we'll call it acts of service. We'll just pick one, okay? And that's not your love language. Your love language, let's say, is quality time or some, one of the other ones, right? Then we're not communicating. But I'm frustrated, likely. Why don't you think I love you? Because you're frustrated like he doesn't love me. I'm like, but I do all this stuff for you. And you're like, but that's evil. It's not evil by doing something bad. It's evil because you're not doing what actually does communicate love. Why are you not doing the good? Okay? Now, the evil then becomes if I know that your quality time or physical touch or gifts or acts of service or whatever it is, words of encouragement, words of affirmation, and I don't give you any of that, well, that's evil. And it's got both of them. It's not doing good and it's causing evil because it's harming you. Not to get the thing that makes you feel loved. And so you need to learn each other. Theoretically, this doesn't play out, but theoretically, wouldn't it make sense that when you first get married, it should be really tough, and by the time you get 10 years, 15 years in, it should get better instead of divorce? In other words, because you should be adjusting and learning and growing together. Now, there's only 2 reasons people end up in divorce. Either, one, they made a bad choice to begin with. And sometimes that's the case and there's no fixing that. Mm-hmm. The second is an absolute refusal to adjust to each other. Oh, yeah. Okay? Like you do not want to accept the reality of who you're married to. Mm. Okay? Yeah. And part of it is because you guys didn't act like yourselves when you were dating. I want you to be as rawly, be really yourself when you're in a dating situation. I don't mean go like over the top and be stupid, but I mean just be without filters, just be you, because you're going to be that way after you say, I do, so to speak, right? So do it now. Okay, don't hide all your stuff that they're going to, it's all going to be out there in the open later anyway. Be yourself. And also, how are you going to know how the other person is going to handle you being you if you don't do it? And then they don't handle it, and then you get all upset. You know. Look, I'm not embarrassed to say this. My wife and I, 25 years now, I think we're actually finally figuring each other out. Okay? Now, it shouldn't have taken this long. Okay? But we didn't adjust well. So we didn't have any, like, anything so terrible. I'm saying is, but we had our, but I think we're finally, it took 25 years for her to finally realize I've got to accept her the way she is. She's got to accept me the way I am. And then we have to encourage each other how we can then synergize together, right? Which takes work. Because all of you, here's the problem. All of you are expecting that this will just naturally happen. But we're in love. All right. How's that working for you? It's not enough. It's not enough. All of you say, but I love Yahweh. Those are nice words. But he has a relationship expectation. Yeah. And you have one from him too. You got to get to know each other and then adjust. He's not going to adjust to you, but you got to adjust to him. Okay? But you've been sold a different understanding of him and Messiah than it actually is the reality of the situation. Okay? So same thing with husband and wife. In this here, the verse that you really wanted to get to was this whole idea of like, okay, so she'd do him good and not evil. Well, why would she ever do him evil? And of course she would do him good if she knows him and trusts him. And he trusts her and knows her. Because you'd know what's evil to that person and what's good to that person, you know? Okay? Look, if I was raised in a house where you just walked in the house, and you were raised in a house where we took our shoes off before we walked in the house. And I had to adjust to you because you kept getting mad at me because I kept my shoes on. I could stubbornly just keep pushing my thing, or I could realize I could do you good and not evil because it doesn't matter. I take the stupid shoes off and just take them off because that's going to please you, make no difference to me, maybe inconvenient in some sense, whatever. You know what I'm saying? But you have to adjust to each other, okay? If you were in a family that always got together and everybody sat together and had dinner together, and somebody else in the family where everybody was scattered everywhere, nobody ever did that, again, you have to then learn to adjust, okay? And if I'm the husband, I think mostly you need to adjust to her, okay? Unless it's something important. And by the way, shoes on or off is not important. Dinner together or not is not important. By the way, I know Shamish's and some of the other guys are getting mad at me. The remote control is not important. Okay? It's not. And you can ask my wife. She actually has to argue with me to make me keep it. Not that we really argue. I'll say to her when she comes, I say, hey, you watch whatever you want. She goes, no, it's okay. You can watch. I said, I really don't care. So you can watch. Because I can't let that be important. Okay? Trying to please her has got to be more important than whatever I want to watch. You know, besides, I can put a headset on and put my phone on and watch whatever I want, which I'll often do. She doesn't need me to watch whatever she's watching with her, and I'll still sit with her because she likes that. That's part of her quality time. So she'll watch whatever she wants, and I'll just do whatever I'm doing. But I'm still with her. I got my laptop on my little table, and I'm doing my work or whatever I'm doing. But are you going to make your emotional preference, I want, I don't like, this is the way it has to be, more important than the relationship, you know? Or you're going to learn to adjust to each other. You got to adjust to women, okay? And if you got a man that's going out of his way to give you things in terms of like I give the remote, which believe it or not is a big deal, not to me, but a lot of people tell me it's a big deal, the wife should recognize that and do other things that she realizes is important to her husband. And then he goes, oh, I really appreciate you remembered that that's what I prefer or don't like or do like, and you made adjustments. And then you start to feed off each other, right? But that's where you first have to get the baby stuff off, grow up, and stop caring about things that are just not that important and care about the things that really are important. Problem is, you have a really bad time knowing which is which. And that needs counsel sometimes. It really does. Okay? All right, Janet?
Yeah, so you would say with the part that got my attention was all her life. So we say that that's kind of what we should be focusing on, doing good every day of our life. Good to go to our husbands.
Well, all the days of her life, meaning that, you know, in other words, she should be doing it as long as she's married and still there. I mean, you know, all the days of her life. Now, of course, it would be all the days of her life, unless if he passes away, they're not going to still be doing to him. He's going to be dead, right? But as long as you're alive and married and you want to be this woman in Proverbs 31, then you should be you have to first understand what is good to him. Love languages will help. Also, understanding his personality and your personality and where they work well and where they don't work well and make adjustments. I teach this to everybody who's dating before they get married, okay? Anybody thinking about getting married, I say, look, you need to learn what each other's colors are so you know how to adjust to that. Learn each other's love languages so that you'll know that you'll have to learn how to adjust to that, okay? And by the way, just knowing that quality time is my wife's primary one doesn't mean I had any clue what that looked like. I mean, I could come up with an answer what I think quality time is. It would be random if I got it right. Or I could let her tell me what it looks like. She thinks it's quality time if I sit in the room with her while she watches a show, even if I'm not watching. Okay? That's quality time for her. My daughter's quality time is I have to give her 100% full attention. Phone off. Don't look at anything else. Full attention. Everybody's different. Okay? So I don't. And I suggest to you guys, don't try to figure it out. Ask them, what's it look like to you? And if you know what yours is, tell them. You know? I mean, one of my highest ones is words of affirmation, but you know what the odd thing is? I only really need it from her. I don't really need it from the rest of you. I don't mind when you guys tell me, hey, that teaching was great, it really blessed me, whatever. But I really just need it from her. So it's a very specific, even though it's very high, it's my second highest score, right? I just need it from her. Which actually, conveniently, my first high score is physical touch. I also only need it from her. Okay? So that kind of works out. But you need to explain to people what this looks like. Not people, your wife, your husband, what it looks like to you. Okay? Don't think that they should know. Well, I told you my first thing is acts of service. And the guy's like, but I have no idea. I've done all these things for you and that didn't work. What does that look like to you? Okay? All right, Ashley.
I have a couple of questions, one being the halakhic one. Every time I drive by to a really good friend's house, I'm seeing three crosses on the side of the road. And I understand one cross, but why is there three?
Because in the one verse it talks about, no, it's because in the one verse it talks about when Yeshua was crucified that there were two thieves on either side of him. So it's basically the three crosses, okay? Okay, so you usually have one that's bigger in the middle and there's two on the side because that's the configuration, all right? Probably also a Trinitarian link to there somewhere as well, but it's really, I think it's because of the, anybody know a difference? It's really because of the thieves on the cross and him. And so that's the image that you see in the Gospels.
Okay, I wasn't going to ask this, but now I'm wondering, like, why do people do that?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know why they decide to wear these things on necklaces and why they got to, I don't understand what they do.
I mean, I get necklaces in a way because they want to have that, but the three every time I drive by, I'm like, what are they doing? Okay, don't.
It's imagery that matches what they've been told. That's okay. All.
Okay, sorry, I wasn't taught that thing. My second question is, I have 0% yellow. I'm trying to be a little bit more yellow. Every time I try to do that, people mistake me or they misunderstand me or they don't realize I'm just trying to be silly. How do I say I'm just trying to be yellow without them getting offended or...
Okay. look, there's two sides to the yellow personality, okay? One side is the performer. You want to be the center of attention and the life of the party, okay? But another side to yellow is just fun is important to you.
That's what I'm trying to...
So fun being important to you doesn't mean you have to be silly. You have to like to be places where people are doing things that you find are fun. That having fun is important, okay? it's a primary driver for the yellow personality. But some of the yellow personalities also want to actually be the life of the party. Okay? So it's about being fun. See, some of you people say, well, I guess I'm no fun because I don't have any yellow. I said, no, you can be plenty fun. Fun's just not your priority. Okay? Not your driver. But if people are having fun and you like to be where fun is being had, that's plenty of your yellow right there.
I just don't like people looking at me like, what's wrong with you? You don't have yellow and you want to have fun. I'm like...
Well, wait. Anybody looking at you with like and thinking what's wrong with you, is that something wrong with them? Okay. Why are you looking at anybody... Well, how come you're not yellow? How come you're not blue? You know what? First of all you blues need to shut up because you're the ones doing it. Because no other color is going to make that comment. Please, blues, keep your mouths. Edit what you say a lot more than you're doing, okay? Your judging just comes right out. Stop judging everybody, okay? All right, go ahead.
And my last and final one, group of questions. It kind of actually goes with what Rocky was saying. When he was talking about stay in him, as in stay in Yahweh, when I don't remember a lot of my panic attacks or PTSD, but when I do, I remember, like, I get to a point and then I'll freeze. But in that freezing moment, I'm like, I'm praying, please don't, like, stay with me. Don't leave me. Like, I don't want to do this by myself because I know everyone's around me, but I'm in my head by myself.
Right.
And then it just goes black and spins and it's done. How do I, because I feel when I'm praying for stay in me, I can feel me pulling away from him. How do I grab onto that more, like mentally, because physically I can't move at all, but mentally, how do I grab onto that? Because it's so painful to feel like I'm alone and he can't help me.
I don't know how to answer that. I mean, look, it's maybe the cling, cleave, hold fast teaching would help with that, because when you're feeling like you're pulling away or being pulled away, it's, I always picture like in the cartoons and the movies where the storm is raging and the boat is being tossed all over and you see guys holding on to the mast and they're laying out sideways as the wind is blowing so hard and they're holding on for dear life, so to speak. That's clinging, all right? Or the child that's afraid and runs and grabs your leg and won't let go and you can't peel them off. Somehow you got to find that. Now, bear in mind, that child and the person grabbing onto the mast of the boat have the same thing in common. They trust that if they could just hold on, they'll be safe. Maybe you need to embrace that thought a little more.
Well, that happened once, actually, when you know, I'm talking about the one time you had me in your room and you grabbed me by my face and you were saying, I'm here, it's okay.
Yeah.
I wish I had that more often, because it's like when I came to and you were there, I'm just like, oh my gosh, like I am okay. But lately it's like, I don't have, and I thank you for that 100%, but it's like, I don't know how to explain it. It's so difficult because it's like, I pray, I stay in him, and then everything's black and gone.
All right. Now you got to understand.
Like I'm in the abyss.
Wait, hold on. But your struggle is not the stay in him part. The struggle is the other psycho-emotional things that need to be cleaned up. Okay? You want to stay in him. That's not your problem. The problem is when other things trigger, you're having a challenge in that kind of idea of staying in him. Okay? So keep getting healthier, which you are, and that stuff will fix itself. Just be patient. You haven't let go. Nobody here is going to let you let go. Okay?
No, I understand that. It's just...
Listen, you haven't let go. You're not going to let go. Okay? Just keep going. You keep taping that one step, one day at a time, one step at a time. You're heading in the right direction.
Okay. And final with that, if I may, it's the let go part, like the thing on Wednesday, like, I didn't even remember that until it was happening again. So it's like, how do I let go of something when I don't even know there's even an issue?
Go see Janet. No, I mean, look, that's the kind of stuff that professional people can help you dig out, root it out, and do the different things and techniques. And you understand what she can do. But I'm just saying is that's not something that I work with, okay? Okay, you have to dig down underneath and deal with your PTSD and the traumas and things that are there that need to be brought up and triggered and then dealt with so they don't trigger anymore. Okay, and that's something she does. Okay? Okay, good. All right, Melissa.
So my I read Isaiah 53 and 54 over and over again.
Okay.
And it's talking about how he was despised and rejected by men, a man of pains and known sickness, mm-hmm. and as one from whom the face is hidden, being despised, and we did not consider him. Truly, he has borne our sicknesses and carried our pains, yet we reckon him smitten, stricken by Elohim, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our crookedness. It says the chastisement for our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we were healed. And I want to make sure that I stand on this all the time for my personal healing. And then this morning when I woke up and I thought I was meditating on it, and I thought that was for spiritual healing. But it was for, we all need mental healing and emotional healing, spiritual and physical healing. And so then, you know, in the church they taught as the Christian church, well, you know, he died for our healing. And so really there's nothing for you to do. And I believe that. But when I had cancer, I reflected on that. I had met a lady who had breast cancer, and so did her mother. And she developed this green drink, and I did something. I drank it. So then when I came here, I realized that salvation is not just salvation, but it's by the works that we do. So we have to do something for our physical healing. I mean, we have to learn how to eat differently, exercise, or figure out what it is we need to do. So I have different diseases, and everything contradicted each other that I was supposed to be doing for that healing. And I got really confused. And so I went to my doctor, and she said, well, you're not absorbing anything. Just eat whatever you want to anyway. Well, I did to a certain extent, but I know certain things will make me sick and not help my blood sugar and all that. But in a way, it was freeing, because now I did some things and ate different things that were really good, and I was just being boring. And, you know, there's a lot of food out there, and it's good quality food and stuff, but I kind of found it. But I want to make sure that I understand this, you know, that by his stripes we are healed.
All right.
So, you know, and we all need healing. So this is for everybody, really, because I know you have to believe, you have to have faith.
All right, hold on. I need to interrupt, because I wasn't sure where you were going, but you were going the same place all the time. Mm-hmm. That verse has nothing to do with health.
Oh.
Where is anything in there about health? What is this verse connected to?
Healing.
No, but what else is happening here? It's not connected to healing. Healing what? What's that issue here? Israel's relationship with Yahweh, which is damaged. And Israel is also mentioned, by the way, as the one who's being talked about here.
That,
and so the Jews believe this is talking about Israel, and it is.
Mm-hmm,
it's also talking about Yeshua. Mm-hmm. And it's talking about healing of a relationship, healing of the breach. I'm not talking about physical healing, anything about health here at all. Okay? He has borne our sicknesses and carried our pains. Sicknesses of what? Of behavior, of mind, of all the spiritual stuff that's going on there. Because the relationship was the problem. Okay? And so by the way, one of the intents of a father striping their child is to heal them of the behavior. Because then they'll stop doing it. That's what we're hoping, right? That was the whole intent when people used to smack their kids, whatever, that a stripe would say, okay, now you're not going to do that again. You'll be safer because you're not going to do that dumb thing again. So I don't see anything in this verse, and it's the first time it's ever really come up where I got to address it. I don't see anything in here that has anything to do with health. Okay? Physical health. Oh, yeah, it's spiritual health, psycho-emotional health. Anything in here about physical health. Does everybody agree with me now that you're seeing it that way? Okay? Which is why it never worked.
Hallelujah.
And everybody's all, that's part of your question. How come? Am I not believing enough? Because after all, by his stripes, I'm healed. Every church teaches you to stand on that. But it's not talking about physical health here. The whole context of this part of Isaiah is about a breach of relationship being healed at some point. Okay? And that relationship is between Israel and the Creator. Does that help clear that up?
Yes, and I did see that, and I do know that, and especially for Isaiah 54 when it says you were rejected and like a widow,
Look, verse 5 says he was pierced for our transgressions. Verse 6, it says we're all like sheep who went astray. Each one of us turned away on his own. I said, and Yahweh has laid on him the crookedness of us all. Okay? So, I mean, this is not talking about physical health, except that physical health was a promise in Deuteronomy of the nation cohesively in covenant in the land. Okay?
So as spiritual healing comes in, we overcome and we walk in the way that's going to bring the healing, because I do...
No, I'm not going to tell you that anything you do is going to bring any kind of physical healing except doing physical things. Yahweh may decide to, on his own, intervene. That does happen. Those miracles do happen. Mm-hmm. But 99% of the time, you need to do some of the things you're doing. Learn what is causing the problem and fix it. See, I will tell you guys, I'm doing my own journey with this physical stuff, like health-wise. And one of the things that I absolutely have learned, and this isn't going to, like, mind-blowing product or service to buy or anything, is that we're all different. One size fits all does not work, okay? No one product works for everybody, one food, diet, whatever. Learn yourself. Learn your body, okay? I pay attention every day what I eat, and I pay attention every day to how I'm affected by what I eat. Good or bad, so I learn certain foods work better for me than other foods. Also, go get tested. Go get blood work done. Go find out how your body is measuring up in terms of all the different things and systems in your body, and then see what might need to be done to bring some of them that are out of balance into balance. Because you may then find out you are not processing certain things. We've had some people in here find out they don't process iron. We've had other people find out they don't process the B vitamins. Learn your body, okay? But just realize you can't just go on the internet and look up, whatever and think it's going to work for you. There's vegetarian and vegan, there's carnivore on the other side. Guess what? They both work for some people. Not one size fits all, though. It doesn't work for everybody, okay? Learn you. Start fixing those things, and guess what? Your health will come around.
I also try to do herbs, but I was doing too many at one time, and it was making me sick.
It's not just too many. You might be doing ones that are not the right ones for you.
Exactly.
So it's not just that you did too many. Maybe you did ones you didn't need.
Exactly. All right? Thank you so much for that, Rabbi.
You're welcome. All right? Because you have to know, some things you may have in abundance and never knew it, and then you're trying to supplement and add more. Other things you may have a deficit and had no idea you had a deficit. So go get tested. Go someplace where they will do the blood work, check all your different systems, and let you know. Do an allergy thing. Find out if there's foods you might have issues with that don't react well in your system. Get information. Don't necessarily let the people who do the information then tell you what to do. Listen to them and say, okay, I'll consider that. You don't have to do whatever they tell you, but at least you go and get the diagnosis and say, yeah, your kidneys and liver are fine, but your other this and this is not so good, or your lungs are this. Find out what's going on with your thyroid and all these other systems and all your hormonal systems and all your, organ systems. Find out what's going on.
It costs money.
Oh, it costs money to suffer like you're doing now and just randomly throwing money into all kinds of stuff you're buying. Okay? I take a reasonable amount of different supplements, but they're all under the supervision of somebody who does the blood work on me every 6 months. Okay? And so I get to go and see the improvement or not. And I know the things I've been doing have done well for me because where I started and where I am now are light years apart, improved. Okay? But I would never have known, except that I get the blood work. As a matter of fact, I'm due to get that again probably after Passover at some point. Okay, as you get into May. And then I'll see how that's progressing. And I've got now 4 or 5 of these, because every 6 months you start to accumulate. And you get to see a pattern of, is what you're doing working or not? All right? Simple as that. Okay, but I'm glad that Isaiah 53 came out, because I don't think I've ever said that before. But I think that we can get confused with this whole, by his stripes, I'm standing on that. Listen, Christianity gave you the idea of standing on these verses. Standing. Listen, if you put the verses under your feet and stand on them, what do you think is going to happen? What do you mean I'm standing on these verses? Well, Yahweh, you don't have a choice. I'm standing on his verse. You have to heal me. Yeah, I'm sure that works for him. Yeah, he's real intimidated by that. okay? He can heal you of everything and anything if he so chooses. Or he could let you figure out how to learn about your body and make choices and fix some things. And that might be one of the reasons why he hasn't healed you. Okay? Look, this cough thing that I keep getting, I know I have a physical mechanical problem where anything in my nasal passages will drip, and some of it, instead of going down into the stomach and stuff, will go into the lungs. So I don't know if there's anything I can do physically to deal with that. What I can do is find better ways to make sure that I'm getting that stuff out of me, minimizing the production of the mucus in the first place, right? So learning is what I'm trying to do. Because some of you watch me cough, you get all upset about it. It's an ongoing problem. I could tell you right now, I'm in better health now than I've been ever. Because I got all these things, you know. I've not been sick at all winter. You guys haven't seen me miss any days. And then you look at me and say, but you got that cough. Because stuff keeps getting in my lungs. Okay, not bacteria, not a virus. Just mucus, you know. Probably mostly from the allergies of all the stuff growing out there. I mean, praise Yah, it keeps raining, but, you know, it keeps raining. And then the rain makes everything grow. And then next thing you know, I got yellow all over my car, you know. Which, by the way, if you guys think that's a problem, go to Atlanta. Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's like an inch thick and your car's yellow. I've never seen anything like that anywhere. I'm sure it happens in other places, but I've never seen anything like that. Sometimes you get a little dusting of it here. That's nothing, right? In Atlanta, oh, my gosh. My whole car was yellow. It's like, what in the world? Someone dumped a bucket of pollen sand on my car or something. But they're all that everywhere. And people are breathing that in. Oh, my gosh. All right, Mr. Payne.
So I have a question.
By the way, that doesn't mean he's a Payne for those. That's his last name, just so you know. Okay.
No worries. So I have a question.
So when you were growing up, then they said, man, you're really a Payne. You say, yeah, absolutely, I am.
All my life.
All your life. There you go.
So I have a question for clarity, because partly I just simply don't know. And part of it is a discrepancy of what I've heard. And before I ask the question, I want to give a little bit of background so you understand the question better. My wife and I, come Pesach, will be here 1 year. We praise Yah for that. And before we came here and knew about you, we prayed with our family every night, Lord, help us to be ready for your coming. And in the middle of the night when I was looking at archaeology, I found the Millennium the Kingdom teaching. And I woke my wife up in the middle of the night, so you got to listen to this guy. Anyways, so we've been here. We greatly appreciate Brevinson's, you know, Torah study for the kids, the YTM program,
yeah.
And the knowledge that we've gained. And in fact, at first it was a fire hose of information, and still is to a point. But I just don't know enough of the background history, so I'm asking this question because I want to know. And I'm seeing more and more of Torah in the Brit Hadashah, or the New Testament, how much it plays a part. But my question is based on several scriptures, and it's around the temple. And specifically, Zechariah was in the temple in Luke, and Gabriel is to appear before him, before, you know, to give him a message. And specifically in verse 9, it says, according to the institute of the priesthood, he was chosen to burn a lot of incense when he went into the dwelling place of Yahweh. So I want to keep that in mind. My next question is in Luke 2. When Mary and Joseph went to the set-apart place, the Simeon, according to the Torah, in 2:27, and he came in the spirit to the set apart place, and as his parents were brought into the child Yahweh to do for him according to the usual practice of the Torah. The question I have is also based on when Yeshua was older and went to the temple, and threw over the tables of the money changers for the sacrifice or the animals they sold for sacrifice.
Right.
And also later in his life, when he was to be crucified and died and rose again. My question is it correct to assume that the Ark of the Covenant or the Ark of the Testimonies was in the Holy of Most Holies during all those times?
You know what? I don't have, and you could have asked that question without all the background, but that's, okay.
Well, I just wanted you to understand my thought process.
I don't remember when it was removed. And so when it was there and when it wasn't there, there is a point after Yeshua where the Jewish sages talk about that the rope that they would put on the priest, you know, no longer changed colors, and there's some other things that would have you believe that it was there at that time. And so that's not my area of study. So I don't actually have that answer. Why does it matter?
Why does it matter?
Yeah.
Well, I guess in the future with the new temple, will the Ark of the Covenant be there?
And again, why does that matter? Because in other words, you're knowing it or not.
The presence of God, because he says he went into the dwelling place of Yahweh, doesn't the Ark need to be there for him to dwell there? I just don't understand.
I mean, if you read in the Exodus journey, I mean, Yahweh met at the tent of meeting and other places without the Ark being there.
Okay.
I mean, he doesn't need the Ark to do anything.
I didn't know.
Would it be there?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think there's any reason that you couldn't speculate that it would be reunited with a temple at some point, at least brought back into play at some point. I would guess that would probably be more after the return of Yeshua, that we would then see that happen. I don't see anything in Revelation or anywhere else that seems to hint that you would see the Ark pop up at any point prior to that. Okay? I would think that it's an important enough object of the story that it would likely make an appearance at some point. But I would think that would be in the millennium.
Okay.
And then restored to function, to whatever function it had. Okay?
Okay.
All right,
thank you.
You're welcome. Good question. All right, Mr. Pete.
So, Rabbi, it's really uncanny, and this happens so often, it shouldn't be surprising anymore. Brenda and I were talking about...
Wait. By the way, we are taking up at the next leadership council the fact that you've publicly admitted you pick up sticks on the Sabbath. So, he had this little thing on his Zoom that says, I pick up sticks on the Sabbath. He says, I'm the praise team drummer. But, you know. Yeah. Yeah, I saw that today or last night, and I was like, okay, I probably need to make a joke about that at some point.
But I showed that to you before I actually posted it, so I did get permission. You may not remember, because I probably caught you at a time when I anticipated you were not paying attention. So.
No, it's not just that. No, if it's something that I end up approving like that, that I think is not a big deal, it doesn't mean that it's going to register very much, because I didn't think it was a big deal.
Okay.
But it was worth making a joke when I saw it yesterday, so.
Okay. As very often happens, Brendan and I will be talking about something, and then we'll either watch a teaching or you'll give a teaching that will address that exact point exactly. And that happened this morning. What planted a seed with Brenda was something after during the afterburn last week, where a woman called and you gave her some advice or some guidance towards something related to self-affirmation, that the way for you to improve the type of person you are or resolve something you want to resolve in your personality is to affirmatively think of yourself in that regard. And you've also talked about, for example, kids that hang out with dopers are going to become dopers, and kids that hang out with people who excel are going to excel. So that got Brenda to thinking, because she's always struggled with her walk, and why can't she be better at this than she is? Why does she have these little things that get in the way? And that led her miraculously into quantum theory. which she made that leap, but actually found, she says she found about 17 or 19 parts in Scripture where Yeshua talks in those terms about making what is perceived to be in the future actually happening right now. And she said, so that's that triggered her light bulb in her that made sense out of let this mind be in you. Because we think in a linear manner, whereas Yahweh doesn't think that way. Everything we want to be life-changing for us, we can make happen. It's just a matter of us changing our thinking. So one of the things she said she suggested would be in the morning when you get up, think about what you're going to do that day. Think about what there is about you that you want to change, that you're going to do differently, and anticipate those things and already play through those scenarios in a positive manner. And that's a way of doing that. And I'm just wondering, does that make any sense?
Well, I think I literally said that at some point. So, yes, it makes sense.
Okay. All right. Well, then,
not word for word, but pretty much. And I said the same thing about setting that intention the night before as well. You know, so I've made that point almost more literally for the night before than the morning of, but the idea of setting the intention and the expectation.
So that made me think about the Deuteronomy and many other places is full of mentions of prolonging your days. And I've always thought of that in terms of being, you're going to live longer or something, but I don't think that's what it means.
I have taught that quite a bit. Did you miss that?
Well,
what do I teach that prolonging days is referring to? The eternal life. It's referring to the...
Okay, right. But could it also mean, and I refer back to Ephesians, where it talks about redeeming the time, where it says, wake up, you who sleep, arise from the dead, the Messiah shall shine on you. Then you should walk exactly not as unwise, but wise, and don't be foolish, but understand what the desire of Yahweh is. And so in terms of prolonging your days and redeeming the time, can't prolonging your days actually mean that you're making better use of the time you have when you walk the way he wants us to walk?
No. No, I like the idea that you're trying to connect. I think the idea of redeeming the time points to those things, okay? But prolonging the days as it's used, he's saying if you do these things, and it doesn't talk about redeeming time, if you are submitted to, covenanted, and do these things, you will prolong your days in the land is what it talks about. It talks about the idea of the kingdom. It's like it's a metaphor, idiomatic phrase for that, in my opinion, okay? So, I mean, I like the connection you're trying to make, but I think that the verse from the Brit Chadashah that you quoted says it enough. The idea of redeeming the time matches what you're saying, okay? If we do these things, we are redeeming time, which then gives us more time to hopefully do the transformation we need to make, okay? But I think the idiomatic phrase from the Tanakh is a reference to, if we do these things, you're not just going to live long in the land, but you're also then going to have the opportunity for the kingdom, okay? All right, good. And all of you that knew that's what I said, good job. Okay, Isaiah, you look like you're the last one, so you can wrap it up.
Awesome, thank you. Pete almost quite literally stole my question. But I have two that are pretty much unconnected. You mentioned how that in these like Eastern kind of beliefs where they do like meditation, all these different things, that they actually, like you believe that all this stuff is here in Scripture. They're not attributing it correctly. I agree with that. And I'm asking about, I guess, when they... So last week we talked about like kind of writing out some affirmations about ourselves.
Right.
You know,
right.
There's so much in here that I've learned to kind of just claim that I am what Yahweh says I am and I can do what Yahweh says I can do. Right. We are already all that he has made us to be. And I think a matter of emunah is... I mean, it's a matter of emunah required to like step into that, right? So,
well, also there's a requirement of being more detailed than that. I am everything,
sure,
and can be everything, whatever it is, whatever the, you know, the Yahweh made me to be. But what is that, right? I can do everything that he expects me to do, but what is that, right? So the more an affirmation is effective really is the more specific And you have to be as detailed and specific. And that way it has a lot more teeth to it, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
Because we claim general things and then nothing happens because it's too general. Okay? We desire general things and it's too general. You got to be as targeted and specific as you can. And that's really important. By the way, you know, when the beginning of what you said, there's an awful lot in Scripture that makes it very clear that we're vibrational beings, that the whole universe came into being by spoken word, okay, and those kind of things. The thing is that we've done in our Western culture a really good job of just either ignoring all of those realities and doing almost no research into it, which then you have the Eastern philosophies that have done a tremendous amount of understanding, or at least trying to understand, the energetic nature of the universe and our bodies and our and how we interact with each other. And so that's where then science jumps in through quantum physics, okay, and then connects some of those dots where we find out that thoughts are actually things. Like they actually have vibrations and energy to them. And so that's lacking here because of the incredibly myopic and ignorant control freaks that ran this for most of the last 2,000 years, purposely wanted to ignore all those aspects. They just wanted to control people. They didn't want to understand people, and they want you to understand yourself. And so this is a whole different, like when Yeshua says things like, look, if you could believe, you could tell this mountain to be cast into the sea.
Yeah.
That doesn't match anything that the normal Western way of looking at things is. It matches a lot of what you might hear, you know, much further east. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Yeshua's trying to bring an enlightening, so to speak, to these people, but still in the framework of obedience to the Father.
Yeah.
Nowhere does he change the relationship through obedience. If you love me, keep my commandments. But also realize that's the easy part. And so, yes, we need to bring more from here, but also from there in understanding that it is here so that we can start to understand the nature of our issues and our challenges.
Yeah.
Okay? And so, you know, when we talk about things like affirmations, you have to understand the power of just words coming out of your mouth and what that does or doesn't, or how it does or doesn't affect everything. Mm-hmm. You know, every sound, every word that's ever come out of your mouth is still out there. It's just out there, a sound wave's just going along. Now, we don't have the instruments to hear all of that anymore, okay? But it's all out there. So be careful what you say, because it never goes away. It's worse than the internet. It never goes away. Okay? You put stuff in the internet, it's there forever. Okay? But really. But we say things and don't realize the power. The Creator said, let there be light. So this all came out of vibrational energy from the Creator. You are not a solid object. This is not a solid object. It feels solid. But it's a bunch of atoms really close together, vibrating, that are close enough together that I can touch it and it's still there. It doesn't move, right? And the less densely packed those atoms are, you get water, air, other things that are more fluid and you can move through. But everything is vibrational things, you know. But yet, oh no, you're talking too much. So that's not, you know, we don't deal with that. Come on, really? You're going to have to grow up and recognize stuff's in here. Either you want to deal with it or you don't. Okay? Go ahead.
I'm in. Perfect. I think we're also selling ourselves short by not accepting that it's in there, because we're really not stepping into who the Father made us to be. He said, let us make man in our image. And then he showed how creative he really was. Yeshua said, haven't you not read that there will be gods? Like, and I don't think it's like we are on the par or level with him, but he made us to be like not only your thoughts, energy, your feelings too. And I think Ashley asked the question about, I don't remember exactly what you were asking, but it made me think about how you were like, how do I put this into action? How do I put this into place? And I started thinking of like brainwaves, because I've been kind of studying on the different levels of brainwaves and the energy that's behind them. And when you're in like delta status, stasis, or what do they call it, theta?
Yeah.
You are on this level where it's the most potent type of electricity that comes out of us, because we're all electric. We all create right. this electricity. So right.
problem is we're in alpha way too much.
We're in alpha way too much.
Yeah.
But see, when we're in like delta or theta, it's where our dream state is. And like, I mean, I've had a whole bunch of dreams that happened after I dreamed it. So I'm like, did it happen because I dreamed it, or did it happen?
Even if you move into beta from alpha, you're already doing better.
Yeah.
You just have to keep moving along, right? But that's, again, oh, that sounds all too New Agey. No, he made us this way.
Yep.
And either you're going to accept it or you're not.
And are we going to obey? Like, okay. Obey this truth while, I mean, because this is not an idol. This thing isn't an idol. Yahweh made riches. He blessed me to enjoy riches. But he didn't make me to worship riches.
Right.
He made the tree to bring forth the fruit, not to carve it to pray to an idol for the fruit. Like,
Okay, I own a car, and that car helps me drive here, drive home, right? It's a purpose to it. This vehicle that you're in, this body, is so that you can experience things that will help you to elevate. Okay? It's simply a tool to help you have some way to interact with and experience the universe, and then therefore to grow and elevate into Messiah-like place. You know, Messiah absolutely makes it clear the Father's greater than him, but they're both of the same essence, essentially. So on par, no, of the same. It'd be like saying you and I are both men. We're both human beings. We look like we're of the same stuff, but I may have authority over you. Okay. And so eventually, the idea is that we're all going to be of that. I don't know if the word species is the right thing, but that entity type of thing of being an Elohim, being of that type of thing. That's the goal that he has desired, is to bring us into that place. But he wants us to learn what we need to learn so that we can be trustworthy in that place. Okay? Otherwise, you're going to have what you see play out in the Greek and all the other mythology, Roman and Norse. You're going to see gods fighting with each other.
Yeah.
That's what it would look like if you and all of us were given that kind of immortality as we are right now. There would be petty fighting and destruction of all the stuff. Okay? So he's not going to give us that until we become the stuff that's inside this shell healthy enough to be in an immortal shell. Does that make sense now?
Amen.
Which is why you need to let me help you to get the junk out, get it dealt with, get it healed, so that you can become whole and healthy. Not your body, the stuff that's living in your body, the you that's in this thing, this vehicle, okay? So that he can give you a new one that's incorruptible. Well, why put a junked up head into an incorruptible body? Or a messed up heart into an incorruptible body? Wouldn't make any sense. Okay? Because then all these mythologies would actually play out to be real, because that's what the world would look like, with a bunch of so-called gods and all this power who are crazy, selfish.
Yeah.
I mean, they're more petty than human beings when you read those stories.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they're there to justify how we behave, because after all, that's the way they are. We're just like them. Well, he's trying to say, no, you need to be like me. I'm not like all that mess.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeshua says the same thing.
Thank you. I have a different question that I think could relate to where you said that, you know, the Father, Yahweh, like the Son is not the Father, but they are this thing. They're Yahweh. The Father and the Son are Yahweh.
Well, they're Elohim. We'll call it Elohim for now and make it simple as that. And as far as we're going to be talking about it, there are two Elohim.
Yeah.
There's a Father and there's a Son. So in the species, whatever we're going to call it, there's two beings called the Father and the Son. Okay?
That's a good segue for my question about... So there's some scripture in the Brit about worshiping Yeshua. And I've heard sometimes some people talking about, like, we don't worship Yeshua, and or we can say praise Yeshua, or worship, you know, because there's different words we understand have different kind of meaning when it comes to this. But, like, in, I just want to read a couple of these verses and then ask you, like, to kind of nail this down.
Go ahead.
So in Hebrews 13:15, it says, through him, then, let us continually offer up a slaughter offering of praise to Elohim. It's speaking on Yeshua, like through Yeshua. If we read like the whole context before that, let us offer a continuous slaughter offering of praise to Elohim. That is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks.
All right, but remember, wait. But Hebrews, what's the main point of Hebrews? To establish Yeshua as high priest of the Melchizedekian order. So when you look at slaughterings, they were done through the Kohanim high priest.
Yeah.
And so this is not worshiping Yeshua. This is doing going through him just like they went through the Kohen. Okay, so this is not a worshiping Yeshua thing.
Okay.
Okay.
And then in Revelation, it says, Revelation, 5:12, saying with a loud voice. So we have like this picture of the throne room that John's bringing us into.
Right.
5:12 says, saying to him with a loud voice, worthy is the Lamb, having been slain, to receive power, riches, wisdom, strength, and respect, and esteem, and blessing. And we know that these words, strength, respect, esteem, and blessing, actually point right at praise.
Right. Look, and it says that again in verse 13 a little bit, too. It says, to him sitting on the throne and to the Lamb, there's two different ones, be the blessing and respect. This, again, is not praying to. This is simply saying that we recognize his worthiness for his role.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm asking, that, you know, is it like officially, like we can praise Yeshua for who he is. Like he's not going to do what we're supposed to do. He's exactly what he's supposed to do.
Look, just like you'd praise anybody, people praise me. They say, we really appreciate you. That's praise. Okay. We say, look, I really appreciate what you do in my life. I really appreciate what your teachings have helped. Praise him for all the things he did. Absolutely. You could say, hey, I really appreciate everything that I have because you gave us all of this.
Yeah.
Okay? All right? And so it's an appreciation and valuing, right? As opposed to now, he doesn't want you to pray to him, and he doesn't want you to elevate him into an object of worship that way. He says he always wanted to direct you to the Father. He always directs you up, redirects you up, okay? That's why the guy says, you know, good rabbi. He goes, well, who are you calling good? That was good. It was like a silly thing to say necessarily because it was not that big a deal, but he's trying to make a point. Don't focus on me, because they were starting to. He said, don't focus on me. He says, I'm here only to point you that way. Okay? Amen. Now, we can say we appreciate your efforts to do that, and we have benefited from your efforts to do that, and we want to give you praise for doing your part. Look, I do not do like some people do, and I'm not picking on it. Rabbi Tom does this all the time, and I know that's where his heart's at. I will not to say anything but thank you when you praise me. I'm not going to redirect it and say, oh, well, it's not me. It's, you know, I did the work. Now, he gave me it, just like Yeshua did the work. Yeshua will appreciate your praise, too, because he still had to do his part. Yeah. So when you come up to say, Rabbi, your teachings really blessed me, I say thank you. I don't go, oh, no, don't say nice things about me. No, I worked hard. I did everything. I was available. I got out of the way. You know what I'm saying? And you could do more like that too, Rabbi Tom. Take the praise, because you don't take it very well. All right? When we tell you your teaching is good and we appreciate it, say thank you. Look, it's the church taught us to be humble beyond what's necessary. You still did the job, sat in front of us at a table with a microphone and gave a teaching. Okay?
Yeah.
And that may be worthy of praise. If it blessed somebody and benefited you, you should say, hey, I thank you. I appreciate it. Those are words of praise. Okay? Amen. So Yeshua also did all that he did. And you can give him words of praise. And that would be absolutely appropriate. Okay? All right. Thank you, Isaiah. So that wraps up our zone one. All right? Good job.